Welcome to the Kawartha Small Business Podcast, where we believe the Kawarthas can be the most thriving region in Canada for small businesses. I'm Brian Rupp from Profit Coach.
And I'm Matt Garrity from Matty G Digital.
And we are recording from the Thrive Podcast Studio at Thrive Coworking Community, downtown Lindsay, Ontario at 18 Kent Street West.
All right, it's Aisha. Go.
It is. Hi, everybody out there. My name is Aisha Mansur-Gonzalez. I am an actress. Wow, why did I say actress? I always say actor.
Actor.
That's the first time, I think, in a long time I've said that, because I don't really believe in the differentiation. But because I was a dancer first, so you don't say danceress.
A female dancer.
You can say that, but no one says that.
No.
Like, you usually say male dancer, because also male dancers are more rare. So usually when you say dancer, you just say dancer. You don't
like
say
a unicorn.
Yeah, like males are always a unicorn. But anyways, I could go off on that tangent about why the males are just a unicorn.
We should be taking bets on which tangent this episode
is. Yeah, we should have written it down.
You should be taking notes, Brian, because it's going to go all over the place.
Go all over the place. I like it.
Aisha is a female actress, female writer. What else?
I am a female, everyone.
Surprise!
That's surprise! I'm an actor and a writer. I coach acting as well. And I'm going to be starting my production company, which is the most exciting thing.
That's so exciting.
It's very exciting.
It's like the small business owner entrepreneur that probably didn't realize that they're small business owner entrepreneur.
100%. 100%. I would never have called myself an entrepreneur. Like, it's not how I think about myself. I think artists generally don't think about themselves that way.
Yeah, but they totally are.
But they are.
Pretty much every entrepreneur is an artist who doesn't even know they're an artist.
Right. So it goes both ways.
Yeah, it does definitely go both ways.
And why do artists resist that so much, do you think?
I think because, I mean, speaking for myself, I think because we relate the word entrepreneur to business, you know, in quotation marks. And what that looks like to us is very different. Like, we think of a suit and tie. We think of money, you know. And artists are generally people who don't, at least not appear to be focused on money. Money is the ick, right? Like you're an artist. You know, you do it for the art. You do it for the love, which is true.
You're not doing it to make money, which
yes,
I think. To me, you know, we joke a lot about people cosplaying entrepreneur. I've heard the word LARPing, like live action.
That's hilarious.
Entrepreneur.
Oh my God, that would be a great skit. That would be a, sorry, sidebar, that would be a great skit.
Yeah, let's try
in some kind of
LARPing
something.
Entrepreneur.
Yeah.
because it happens so much and it kind of ruins the word. The root of the word in the earliest definition, it's a French word, and it's somebody who kind of takes something from a lower value and increases the value. So a lot of art is, it's entrepreneurship.
That's so interesting.
Something and then you make something else out of it that's of higher value.
Right.
And then I think it's just got confused with people who want to be entrepreneurs, want to make money. But yet some of the most successful entrepreneurs, it's all about the creation for them, or the what are they seeing and what are they playing with? And they end up, they fail more often than they're successful. But then when people LARP, it's like they want to play and talk about the things that they did and kind of how smart they are.
Well,
it's just a big ick.
Yeah, it's a big ick, but I think it's interesting now knowing what the how that word came about. That's super interesting to me because I think as I was saying, that the artist, you know, I think the ick is because we think of it as being like, oh, I'm just going for the money. But if you think about it in terms of what you just described, the actual meaning of the word, that you're actually taking this kind of nugget, basically, of your idea, of whatever it is, and just making it better, really, making it better, more accessible, whatever, and that could result in money. Which is great.
It can result in money.
It can, but, and oftentimes does, because that's kind of how growth works. Right?
They always use the example in school of a widget, which never related to me.
widget? Because like on your phone?
I don't even know. Mm. Exactly. Like, I can't swing a hammer. I figured a widget was something you built in a factory.
Oh, that's so funny.
It was like, yeah. You take this widget, and like, it was always the example in my head. I'm like, this is not relating to me.
No. At all. I don't know what they mean by that.
See, and at my school, it was like, oh, you got to be an entrepreneur. And they always showed this video of the guy who invented the Fox 40 whistle.
Oh, my God.
Which is like the whistle without the P.
Okay, yes, yes, yes.
Because whistles always had the little
rattling thing.
And I was like, I can't invent anything.
like, that's what an entrepreneur is. Yeah. They invent things. Stuff. That's so and funny.
When you think of the value, it can be the value of an idea. It can be the value of, you know, there's lots of products that are worth scrap. And then someone is like, oh, I could just market it like this or yeah. change it. And
oh, or it was meant for, they were trying to do something else and then it ended up being or they cheese whiz, yeah. you know, like it was supposed to be plastic, but it's actually just cheese whiz. Oh, cheese whiz. That's so gross. Or, it's like one molecule away from being plastic. Yeah. It's like a real thing.
Oh, yeah. It's so
margarine, too.
Right? It's delicious. Yeah. But
margarine, I love.
Oh, God.
Margarine's a whole
awful
marketing system.
Oh gosh, they really made people think it was good for them, really.
Yeah, it was a big trick. Or even the you used to like they would like give you the dye in a different pouch, you had to mix it up, and because it got you involved, it made you value it.
Oh my, because
it used to not be it came white, and if you wanted it
what
yellow,
I did not even know that
you used to have to mix
isn't it funny how they the proverbial they took us so far away from growing our own things, cooking our own food, and then they're like, but here we're going to come back and, yeah. and make you mix these two synthetic things together to make you feel like you're doing something, yeah. but we used to be doing things. You just...
Yeah, you used to churn the butter, but now you're just mixing in the margarine.
Mixing in the color. It's awful.
This is a tangent that we probably continue talking about, but like it's probably yes. trying to get us more dependent on government.
100% everything.
But yes.
But we digress. Yeah. That's not what this podcast is about.
Yeah.
I went off the deep end last week or 2 weeks ago when I was in America. And oh. there was a part of me that just was like, nah, they get it. I like it here. And I want the freedom.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
I understand kind of what they're getting at.
Yeah.
Fighting government. So
yeah,
I've gone a little bit down
there. No, it's interesting because I lived in New York for 10 years, right? Yeah. I mean, I've been home for like 16, so it was a long time ago. But I lived in New York for 10 years, and it's a very interesting... The thing about the States, like the conundrum, right, is that I know for me at least, I wanted to go there and I loved being there because people were so forward, right? And mm-hmm. and they took risks and they were really powerful in their beliefs and their strengths, no matter good or bad, right? Like, and I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. But then there's obviously the dark side of yes. that, right? And everything has a dark side. Like, we over here are risk averse, and that can be nice in some areas. It's nice to be safe. But in other areas, like in the art world, I actually find it to be very frustrating.
It hurts creation. I love
it. It definitely hurts creation.
Dan Sullivan has a great way to talk about it that is, you know, he's like, it's right in the constitutional documents of the country. So the U.S. is about individual pursuit of life and liberty and freedom.
Right.
And what I like about that is even though it's an individual pursuit, you have to learn to collaborate
mm-hmm.
for what you want. Mm-hmm. So in a way, people take risks. They mm-hmm. collaborate more.
Yes.
They find help. So even coaching, business coaching, in the States, almost every business has a business coach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In Canada, 99% are like, I don't need no help.
Yeah.
I'm not going to have
it's
a
very,
coach.
And it's also this, it's there's also a lack of, like in the States, they're excited about new, right? Like they're excited about, I know at least in my field as an actor, just in terms of acting that, you know, I have met a few American casting directors and, you know, obviously I know a lot of ones here because I work with them. But the major difference is that the American casting directors are really excited to meet new actors. They want to go for coffee with you. They're very personable. Like they want to know you because they want to find the next best. They want to find the next superstar.
They're on an individual
pursuit of being the best casting director, and finding that gem, that unknown that's going to be a star. Whereas here,
they want the system.
They are the power. They want to feel like they're the ones that are gatekeeping. Yeah. They're really gatekeepers because it's you have to go through them, right? So it's a different energy. Like they're not reaching out. They're not, you know, it's very, very different. I think that kind of sums up how
it's everywhere.
It is everywhere.
The Dan Sullivan, the Canada quote is our constitution. It's like founded on the principles of peace, order, and good government. So we want peaceful. We want a system.
Yeah, what order?
We don't want to market our own businesses because people should figure it out and the system should kind of.
And it also should all be the same.
And everyone.
It also should all be the same.
And it should be fair and equal. Yes. And I love it too because even the most conservative of Canadians don't want to compete individually. They just want stuff to the system to work better for them.
That's right.
Right? They still want a system.
Yes. No, they want to rely on the system.
Yeah.
They absolutely.
Just want it to favor them more because they feel like, you know, if they work harder than poor people,
Yeah, right. Right. It's a class system. Status kind of issue, yeah. Right?
And it's so neat when you even talk about the casting directors because it's just a great example of why that's like a profound.
Yeah, it's difference. a huge difference that because that relationship is actually quite vital. Like, it's really for an actor. For actors, need casting directors to be on their side. You have to have them on your side because they're the ones that are going to call you for auditions. They're the ones that are going to put you forward. They're the ones that are going to say, "Hey, you should look at like that's what they do." You know, so if there's no personal relationship, it's hard to because you're just going into it more now. You're just sending in a tape. And it's just, you're not having any conversation, you know, it's almost like a job interview. Like, it's very clinical.
Yeah, that's funny to me, just thinking about, like, the tape, because you don't see how people interact or how do they...
You don't get any direction. You don't get any, you know, so for me, luckily, I'm good at self-directing. I always have been. And I think that just stems from I've been performing my whole life. So I've had an entire lifetime since my childhood of observing myself, of like literally looking in the mirror and observing myself. Yeah. We've talked about this. And so doing that for so long, it's like second nature, right? So I know that when I do a tape, I'm generally really good at directing myself. Like I can kind of get what's going on and I can watch and go, you know, like, let's change this. And that's, but not everyone can do that. Like, some people really need that director to kind of direct them, to give them something. And of course, absolutely, like, you should have that. But when we do tapes, we don't get that opportunity unless you get a callback. Like, so you sent your first tape in, and then if they like your tape, they'll narrow it down, you know, to however many people, and then you get what's called a callback or a recall. And that might be in person. Oftentimes now it's over Zoom. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there's people there. But it's really disjointed and weird to do that on Zoom. Like, it's because the lag sometimes. You're trying to chat with people. It's just, so, yeah, that a lot of that has been taken away, I think, which is very frustrating for a lot of us, especially for people who find it difficult, find that technology difficult to get your spirit to project through the Zoom, you know? Because just like if you are in theater, if you go, you know, you're on a stage, you're projecting that energy out and people are feeling it, right? Yeah. When you're in a room auditioning, people are right there. You're projecting that energy out. And if you're on a screen, it's just not, it takes so much more for people to really feel what you're doing.
How do you think that will affect your industry, short or long term?
I think that there's a, because it's been going on for a long time. This is not really new. But I do think that we're at a time where there's a separation happening. Like there's the business model as it is. Let's call it Hollywood for lack of a better term. And I will include the Canadian industry in that, even though it is different, but just that kind of the machine, let's say, like the machine of entertainment, right? And it functions in this way. Mm-hmm. I think that there are, because of the world, because of what everything's happening in the world and all the stuff, people are waking up to many, many things. And I think there's a lot of creative people in my industry that are like, hang on, let's step over here and do things a little differently. I know for sure that I'm one of those people, you know, which is why I've always thought of starting my own production company for years and years and years. But it's at this moment in time where I'm like, no, this is the moment because I really am yearning for a different way of doing things.
Sure.
And with the show that I'm writing, we're going to be shooting a teaser, hopefully at the end of July. I'm still trying to get the dates right. But, but you know, that in and of itself, like, I'm like, I want to have a rehearsal with the actors, which doesn't happen in television. Like, I want to, like, it's just, I guess what I would say is a more theater way of going about it, about television. Because I know in theater you're doing rehearsals, even though they've cut their times down too. I just feel like there's other ways of doing things. There's a way to make sure that everyone is paid fairly, that it's not this pyramid kind of shape of mm-hmm. paying people. Yeah. Like, I have no interest in there being one person at the top who's making all the money who's, like, not the creative person. I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, the people who are the creative people, who are coming up with these ideas, who are making these ideas come to life, whether that be the camera person, the props person, whoever is building the world and doing... Those people should be making the money.
Sure.
Like, period. Right? But that's not how it's set up. Hmm. So I feel like there is a shift. There's shifts happening all over, and I think that this is one of them. I mean, we'll see if I'm right. But right. I certainly think I'm going that way.
I think lots of people are going that way. Mm-hmm. And it's a good just example of, in the long run, everything goes through cycles.
Yes.
And, you know, to bring in, we'll make everything about economics, like, mm-hmm. you know, the rent-seeking class, and rent is trading, you know, it's not trading labor, talent for money, it's mm-hmm. trading or, you know, capital or non-labor things. So you get these systems where, you know, the pyramid shape is like these companies have that power, so they just scoop their share right off the top mm-hmm. and they don't value the creatives, and that only lasts so long. And we see that on YouTube, like, or places where people who are creative have been able to create themselves their own streams of income.
Yes, exactly.
They keep more of it.
Yeah. Mm. Well, and now also things like Patreon, like, you know, there are ways to do this independently, and that makes me very excited. I have always been a burn it all to the ground kind of person. I kind of always been like that. I don't know why, but I've always been had that, like, kind of anarchy vibe, kind of punk rock, kind of do-it-yourself energy. And it's just the last, you know, 15 years being just like a working actor that I've been kind of steeped into this machine and somehow figure out how to do this, and it worked for me. But I certainly yearn always for things to be different and independent, and for people to have more power over their own stuff that comes out of them.
I think that's what makes business owners,
yeah,
is the notion that they're like, no, I'm going to burn this to the ground.
Yeah, you're right.
Like, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it.
Yeah, absolutely. That is so true. Yeah, that's like, that's like the entrepreneur, right? It's like, that's why you do it.
And that's where most people get into business, because they want to do things their way, mm-hmm. for themselves. Mm-hmm. And it's also where sometimes we still need to have a coach to help us see, like, you still have to create something people want to pay for.
Yes, because we need to make a living.
And tell them about it.
Yeah.
So, but you can still burn it all to the ground and do things a different way.
That's exactly. And because there will always be people who resonate with it. Like, mm-hmm. like, I think that you have to find those people, sure. And that's, I think, where the coaching comes in. It's like, you know, I know for me, I understand all the creative parts. And now that I'm getting ready to shoot this teaser, I'm now in the position of being a producer, which I never thought I would. I thought I would get someone to do that stuff for me.
Yeah.
But as I'm doing it, I'm like, oh, I can totally do this. Like, this is, I can do it my way. And it completely works, right?
You can reimagine.
You can reimagine.
There's no right way.
No. You can. What's that saying? There's millions of ways to skin a cat or whatever. Yeah. Like, that saying is
more than nine ways to skin
a that's right.
Cat.
Yeah, that's right. So it's just reaching the people, I think, is the nut, right? It's like, okay, how do I find my people? The people who are going to really resonate with this thing that I'm trying to do, and understanding that maybe it's not completely mainstream, or maybe it's niche, or maybe it's, and knowing what it is. Like, I feel like I had a moment where I had to go, oh, right. Like, my sense of humor and my visual, my aesthetic, like how I want this to look, is not really mainstream.
But that's where, what I love about that, most of the stuff we love that becomes mainstream starts off as like, here's this,
like, some niche thing
that nobody else will get. And the more specific to a person you are and make those decisions, mm-hmm. I think the better it is. And there's a lot of examples of people starting that way. And then, you know, especially in Hollywood, you hear studios start getting involved and changing everything.
Well, and this is exactly,
And then they water it down.
Yeah.
And then it's like kind of boring.
Well, it becomes a formula because they have formulas.
Yeah.
They have literal formulas for all of the things, for the movies, for the shows. Like you have to hit these points, you know, and you can look at television and say, okay, how many cop shows are there? How many medical dramas? How many law dramas? You know, like it's a formula and some are better than others, but it's a thing that they churn out because they know people will watch it and people like it.
Yeah.
But the thing is, it's like that, you know, feeding people the bare minimum because you know that they'll eat it. And assuming that they have no taste, assuming that they have no palate, assuming that they wouldn't know a good steak if they ate. You know what I mean? Like, kind of making this assumption that people... I just had this conversation a little while ago with some people about theater and about, you know, like... Someone made a comment of like, you know, well, these people won't know the difference if it's like professional or not. I'm like, yeah, they will. Like, it's not intellectual. Like, you can feel these things. Like, if you are sitting in a theater and there are people on stage and they're professional, and then you go to another thing and you see people on stage and they're not, you will know whether or not you know anything about theater intellectually or not. You will feel the difference. And I think it's the same goes for anything we create, right? Like I'm going to create a show, you know, no, it's not going to be mainstream. Does that mean that people aren't going to understand it or that they're not going to resonate with it or they're not going to feel something? No, that doesn't mean that at all. We can't assume that people just want like the basic. You know what I mean? It's like it's, and again, it's like, what it goes down to is the world and like the powers that be and like keep the plebs, right? Like, like keep those plebs occupied, you know? It's like that kind of vibe. Like, give them the bare minimum, they'll be fine, you know?
Yeah.
Keep them distracted. I'm like, no.
Every now and then, you have a circus. We need some.
Yes, bread and circus. Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And I'm like, no. No, give them the filet mignon. Like, what's the problem, right?
Yeah, let them discover.
Yeah. So, anyway. I did want to say something I thought of. I'm kind of going backwards, so I don't know how this works.
That's fine.
But when you guys were talking about being in school, right? And like what you learned in school. And it's interesting that, you know, you had very different experiences of what they were kind of trying to promote.
Yeah.
Like, in your school. And I went to an arts high school. So I was a dance major, and we had, at that time, there was dance, there was theater, there was visual art, and music. They also had a sports department. And it's so interesting because they didn't teach us anything beyond the skill of our art, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there was no conversations about how the hell you were supposed to do anything with this in any real way. Like, how the hell are we supposed to create a future and a career for us, whether that be actually being a dancer on stage or something within the world of dance? Like what are the options? Because the chances are you're going to get injured. So then what do you do if that happens? Like, there was no conversations about that, about like, this is not a longevity career, right? Like you're dancing, it's like being an athlete. Like, you could be done, like, which is what happened to me, right? So, and there's no conversations about that. And I feel like that still happens to this day. Like, I coach people who've gone to theater school and they don't know anything about, like, they're not taught, like,
it's common everywhere. And this is my, every time someone's like, why aren't we taught this? It's like, you can only teach so much.
Sure.
And then we kind of end up people kind of rely on the system to do it. And to me, it comes back to the importance of having great mentors or coaches.
Absolutely.
That can give you that hole.
But if you don't have them, because I didn't.
And
I didn't.
I know I didn't. I look back now, I'm like, oh, I've never really had a real mentor.
No, me neither. Other than my own brother, like, which is problematic in and of itself. My big brother, because he's my big brother, so there's all kinds of other shit going on. But and I appreciate it, and it's whatever. But like, it's not the same, you know, as having like a professional mentor who's in your field, you know, to kind of give you some pointers, which is why I love to coach, because like, I'm like, okay, there's a gap here, and I don't. What's the point of me going through all of these trials and tribulations and having to learn the hard way if I can't give that information to other people? Like, I'm not going to keep that for what? Like, I've already been through it.
Yeah. And so, I think the old generation, some people did keep it all in themselves because it was a threat to like, train.
They don't want to pull up the people behind them.
But if you are fully creative, it's you want to like build a strong industry or help people figure those things out so that they're not like, you know, get hurt dancing and don't know what to do with their lives.
Well, yeah, because it happened to me and it was awful. It was absolutely devastating, you know, like I didn't consider anything else. Like, that was my world. That was my passion, my love, all the things. And I mean, I can look back on it now and say, yeah, maybe, you know, I didn't have the technical skill. And if you saw me, you as a person who maybe doesn't know the specifics of dance would probably think I did have lots of technical skill. But as a dancer, I'm like, I know there were people out there that were like way better technically. I was always a really good performer. Like, all my dance teachers told me I should be an actor. So there's that. So everything is perfectly exactly how it should be. It's not that now that all these years have passed, I understand, obviously. But at the time, like, that was so devastating. Like, I didn't know what the hell to do with myself, you know, and I don't want other people to feel like that. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want young people. It's a terrible feeling. Yeah. You know, why would I want some young person who is trying to do something and then, you know, gets knocked down? Like, if I can give that person some advice and at least like a window into another stream of using what they've already learned in a different way, gosh, they could save so much time. Like, oh, it took me so long to figure it out because there was nobody there. Mm. You know, I fell and there was literally no one there to catch me. And I'm just like, you know, like, just like, 24 years old, like, I don't know what I'm doing. I've danced my whole life. What the? What do I do now, people? You know?
Yeah. Then you acted.
I went to film school first.
Okay.
I did go to film school.
What would be your role you're most proud of?
It has to be Star Trek. It has to be Star Trek Discovery. It has to be. It's the first one that comes to my mind. And I think probably anyone who's listening, and for you guys here, you can understand why. I mean, I think it's a big deal, like doing a it's just one episode, but I'm like a major part in the one episode, and I had to learn fighting.
It was so good.
Thank you. It was so much fun. I had to learn all this like sword work, and I did have a stunt double who was incredible, but I did learn all of it, and I had to learn it in like 2 days.
Oh, wow.
Because actually I was the second choice. So here's the tea. They actually had hired someone else. It was between me and this other person. I don't know who she is. And they had told me, oh, you're shortlist, it's you and this other one. But I was like, oh my god, please let me get it. And then I didn't get it, and I was like, oh damn, okay, fine, whatever, move on. And then like a month later, they called my agent. We're like, we need I should have come in, like, because something happened with this woman. And so because they had already done a month of rehearsal with her, because the fight scenes are intense, like, that's like, you can hurt yourself. I had tennis elbow for like 9 months after. I was like not prepared for that. So they had done all this work with her. So by the time they called me in, they were about to shoot.
Oh, wow.
So I had to learn everything in 2 days. I had to get new costumes made. Like, it was intense. And so I just went in there and was like, okay. And this is where, you know, my dance training, not just physically, but my mental dance training came in. I was able to just get in there and like do it really fast, like fast, hit all the things. Like, everyone was just like quite impressed. Like, the director was like, I remember after one shot, he came up to me. He's like, have you done this kind of stuff before? I'm like, never. And he was like, wow, you're really good at it. I'm like, thank you. I would love to do more. But like, you know, so it was a really intense process. So I think that also is why I'm so proud of it, because I had to really, you know, work hard. It was hard. And it was also, we shot like through the night, which is not my wheelhouse. I'm neither a morning person nor a late night person. I'm neither one.
I kind of peak.
Like, I'm up around 9 a.m., you know, it's like my sweet spot. And I go to bed at like midnight, 1 o'clock, right? But like being up till 4 in the morning, you know, shooting, and you're in these insane costumes and you've got prosthetics and you're wielding a sword, and like it gets kind of Twilight Zone-y. It gets kind of weird at those times in the morning, right? So it was really intense, but an incredible experience, because also the other women I was working with on the show, we just had such a great time together. It was really deep. We had a really meaningful conversation, which doesn't always happen, you know, on set. Long story short. that is my proudest one.
That's amazing. Yeah. I loved, like, it's when I started learning who you are and learned that, I knew immediately the character because I liked that show and immediately remembered that role.
So, that is so, so cool.
One of those memorable ones where I think we were talking about this, the writers and creators of the show. It's like, I wanted more of that. And it had like, it was a great story that just kind of wrapped up really fast. And it's like, why? Like,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, I certainly felt that way. And, but a lot of other people have said that to me. And even on forums, like online, that was another cool thing. Cause I mean, Star Trek, right? Like it's like, it's a whole ass world of people. Yeah. So once I did it, I was like, oh, all this, I had, cards, like trading cards that they made. This company that makes the trading cards, and they have them at the what are they called? The
Comic-Con.
Yeah, the Comic-Con. Yeah. All those play, and they have specific Star Trek ones, right? So they were like the Easter egg card. So they weren't in every pack.
Ooh.
So they were like a special card that if you got a pack, it might be in your pack kind of thing.
And
I had to sign them.
Yeah.
I had to sign them. They sent me boxes, and I had to like sign them all.
Oh wow!
It was really cool. It was just, you know, and they took all these pictures because there's like to make action figures, they put you in this. What's it called? Circular like camera thing. It's like you walk in and it's all these cameras on this frame that's in a circle around you. And there's like tons of cameras, and they take pictures of you from like every inch of your body. And you stand, you do different poses, like action figure poses, right? And then they take all these pictures. I was like, oh my god, please make an action figure. That'd be so cool. But yeah, a lot of people felt that way too. Like they kind of wished that story had gone. And even when I was shooting it, a lot of the crew people were like, oh yeah, you gotta. I think they're gonna write you in. I think they're gonna. And I was like, oh, I hope so. But then. Didn't happen. So,
didn't happen.
What are you gonna do? At least I have the one.
Well, that's because they probably didn't get a chance to see you develop it and work up with it. It was somebody else,
right? Like right? They built this process with. I know. In fact, I will tell you when I booked it, one of the producers like called me and just to kind of welcome me, I guess. He's like, so, hey, you know, like, just wanted to welcome you to the show. And like, I know you're the second, you're number two pick, but like, and I was like,
thanks for
that vote of confidence. And this is before I had stepped foot on set. And then I went in and smashed it because that's what I do. Yeah. You going to call me number two?
Yeah.
Watch this. Yeah. Hold my coffee.
Yeah. Is it an urban legend that your hair was the reason why you booked that show? So Hal is the one that told me this.
Because he cut it.
I hope it's an okay story to bring up.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like,
you went radical. You did something mm-hmm. radical to your hair, mm-hmm. I'll say.
Mm-hmm.
And you got that, and it opened up like a
yes.
whole new realm.
No, that is not a – that is true. I basically – so I have long hair now, and I had long hair for a chunk of time. This is now – I don't know. I think I was probably 37 or something, and my hair was long, and I just really wanted to cut it. Like, and so 2 years I wanted to cut it. For 2 years I was like looking at myself in the mirror like, I don't feel like this person, you know, like – this is, and I've had short hair before. I've done all kinds of things to my, so I was like, I want to cut my hair off. And my agent at the time, different agent that I don't have now, she was just super against it and very concerned. Cause you know, you're a woman, you have long hair and be pretty and all this shit, right? So I was like, I don't subscribe to, I hate that shit. So I don't subscribe. Sorry, I'm swearing, but,
I have to remember to click the
like, beep, beep. Sorry. I swear a lot. So, yeah, so then eventually after, like, 2 years of just really being unhappy with how I didn't feel like me and really not booking a ton of work or anything, it was like I was working, but I'm not nearly, like, what happened to me after. Like,
and
I kind
of – like, let's say, boring, same type of
yeah,
role
Yeah, same
offers.
Type of role offers, you know. I think being a brown, middle-aged woman – on the lower at that time on the lower side of middle age, but it's the way that society sees you. Mm-hmm. At least I will say North American white society, which is what the media is, like, you know, that's what, that's kind of who's still at the top, right? So at that time, especially, it's a little bit different now. They see someone like me as, you know, a lawyer, a doctor, a, you know, professional, right? Because it's the model minority myth, right? And right. even though that's not who I am in real life, that's what I look like on TV, right? So that was getting these kind of really boring, you know, like, doctory, and no offense to, you know, anyone who does that stuff, but it's not really what I love to do. And, yeah, and so then I Hal, who's my husband, who is a hairstylist, he finally, I was like, I'm cutting it. And so I told my agent I was cutting my hair, but I didn't tell her what I was going to do. Because I knew she wasn't going to let me, quote unquote, let me. Like, she wasn't. So I went in there and I got a mohawk. And I was so happy. I cannot tell you. Like, after he cut it. And it was, like, from long. It was, like mid-back, okay?
Yeah.
And cut this mohawk. And I just looked at myself and I just was so happy. It just felt like me. Like, I felt like I was authentically myself, right? And I call her after. I'm like, yep, so I cut it. She goes, so what did you do? And I said, well, so it's really short all around the sides, but it's, like, long on the top and the back. And she goes, so a mohawk? And I was like, yeah, you could call it that. And she was like, okay.
You're fired.
So then I got new pictures. And the thing is, the way that it was, that I could style it, like, if I styled my hair, like, down and straightened it, it looked kind of like an undercut. Like, it, you know, like, if it wasn't up in a kind of more mohawk-y vibe, I could put it down, and it just looked like, and that undercut was really popular. It still is, but at that time, right? So it looked like I had maybe like a pixie undercut vibe. So it could, you know, could be tamer than a mohawk. So anyway, so I got these pictures taken, and they were fierce and amazing. and I immediately booked like 7 commercials, like national commercials. I booked this. I booked so much stuff in the first like 4 months, like, and then continued. But oh, it was like, wow. Bam, 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 as soon as I cut my hair. And it's not like I still was booking. I played a CIA agent. Like, I was still booking the same type, a more elevated, a bigger role, but the same type. So it didn't change my hit. It didn't mean that now all of a sudden I was playing, like, punk rock people. Like, that isn't right. actually what happened. I was still playing the same types of people. So that's, I was like, so what does that tell us? You know, it was a really...
I think it's that, like, to me, it's like, be yourself.
Yes.
To people want that. But it creates some curiosity in the character. So it might still be the doctor, but, like, the doctor with the mohawk is more interesting.
For sure.
Right?
For
especially
sure.
when it is coming from a believable...
Yes. Well, because was. I felt like myself.
Yeah.
Right? And I hadn't been feeling like myself. So I cut and then I felt like me. I looked in the mirror and said, there she is. There's Aisha. And so therefore my work was clear. You know, my work was very clear because I was very clear in myself. So that translates to what you're doing. And I think also I didn't do it for this reason, but I think it also set me apart from the other women in my own category. Mm-hmm. I think because there were no other women. I mean, you'd be hard-pressed to find a female actor in my business at my age with a mohawk. Like, that's pretty rare to find. So I think it also did that. It also kind of made me stick out.
When are you bringing it back?
I don't know. I know. It's so funny.
Is there, like, another idea?
Well, no. Right now, I'm digging the long hair. I'm digging, like, being able to do things with it. I'm kind of enjoying. I've gained some weight because I'm menopausal. And so these are the things that happen, ladies. So I didn't realize until now that I was actually lived my whole life as a skinny little thing. And when I was the skinny little thing, I didn't think I was a skinny little thing. And it's like the folly of youth, right? Like, you don't know. And then now I look back and I go, oh my God, like, you were like a skinny little thing. And not that I'm huge or anything. I think I'm normal sized, right? But when you have a different reference, you're like, oh my God, you know? So now I'm like, I just look different. So I think the hair, I like the whole vibe. It's very witchy. It's very, you know, like, I'm into it. I'm like getting older. I don't care so much about, you know, my physical self and how it looks. I'm more concerned about how I feel. Yeah. So I think those things change as you get older anyway. Mm. So the hair kind of has, and also Hal fired me. So I currently do not have a hairstylist.
Taking applications.
Taking applications.
You could be hairstylist to the stars.
Me?
Well, no. Somebody.
Oh, you're telling the person listening.
Yes. Ian. Ian's listening.
Somebody, somebody cut my hair, please. But I do miss it. Like, when I look at pictures of it, I'm like, oh, man, it's so. Because it's also the kind of haircut that, like, no matter what, you look cool. Like, I roll out of bed, I look freaking cool. You know, like, it's like, how can you, you don't have to do anything. So easy. I literally could just roll out of bed and I looked amazing.
I know what that's like.
So easy not having hair.
Yes.
When did you start thinking of yourself as a business owner?
You know, that's actually really recent. I started coaching. Like, I started my coaching just this year, or like end of last year. And even though I think before that I wanted to be, like, I had the desire to create a business, but I wasn't quite there yet. There's fear wrapped up in there. I mean, there's all kinds of things wrapped up in there. So I had to get rid of some of that shit, right? And I think now, after starting the coaching and using my brain in a different way, I think I've been just acting for so long that I forgot that I'm smart. Like, not that acting's not smart, but you know what I mean? Like, it's a different part of your brain.
Sure.
Yeah.
When you're trying to organize and produce and think about numbers and all these. And I've always been like, oh, my sister's that person. You know, like, that's not me. Like, I'm not the numbers person. I don't understand these things. But actually, I'm okay. Like, I can do it, you know? Yeah, and I think I'm perfectly capable. And I think it's after that. Like, so coaching and then, you know, going through what I was going to charge people and, like, kind of getting my website together. And that's, I think, when I started understanding that, okay, I'm building a business. And that's just escalated with every passing day, you know, with meeting Brian. Like, that's really helped me too. You know, when we talked about what he does, and I was like, oh, yeah, that's the help that I need, because what I'm trying to do is build my business. Because, you know, I'm going to be 48 this year. And when I turned 47 last year, I was like, okay, Aisha, 3 years to 50. What are you going to do? Because you cannot just be a working actor for the rest of your life. Because it's so, you don't have any control, right? Like, I'm beholden to other people to hire me based on such tenuous things, you know? Like, it's not objective, right? So it's you can't be like, I have these skills, they will hire me. Like, it's not, it doesn't work that way, right? So just being like, okay, as I get older, you know, I need to have more stability and more control over my own time, my finances, what I say yes to, even as an actor. Like, I want to be able to be more selective. And in order for me to be more selective, that means I have to make money doing other things. And of course, luckily, I do have ideas. Luckily, I do have goals. Like, I think, you know, I know a lot of actors who, you know, don't, you know, because that's just not how, you know, they are actors and they're not really interested or have the inspiration to create things themselves. And I feel lucky that I do, because at least I know that I can create a business and do something else and be more of my own boss. So entrepreneurship, I mean, this is what you were saying. Like, I think, like you said, like, all of people who own their own businesses, who are entrepreneurs, that's basically what we feel like, right? We just want to have the control over our own livelihood and our own stuff. As much as that is a chance we take, you know, as much as it's like kind of a big leap off the cliff, I mean,
yeah, I've been saying that. I'm trying to say this to more people too. Like, yes, it is a risk. Yes, it is a big jump. But I think you're going to appreciate, so is letting somebody else run your career.
Absolutely.
Or you as an actor are taking a risk in going into a movie, which is being controlled by a director and a producer. And you might not know at the time if what you're doing is good or bad. Yeah. You could be doing an amazing job, but the rest of the movie might suck.
Yeah.
Right? To me, that's just as big of a risk.
Totally.
To me.
Totally.
So.
Yeah, and it's a risk to put it in other people's hands. Like, it's you're risking on either side, right? I've been in a couple movies where after they came out, or just before they came out, the leads of the movies hit scandal.
Yeah.
I've been in two movies where that happened, and I was like, oh, Okay, yeah. Great.
Was
that, you know what I mean?
Was that Dino Dana?
No.
Oh, no, or Odd Squad?
No. None of the. Why did. No. Oh, you're. I'm like, what? I'm like, what? What did they not hear something? No. I was like, no.
When I creeped you when I first met you and I went through like your IMDb, yeah. It was like, it was my kids were yeah. a couple of years younger. And yeah. I was like, Odd Squad and Dino Dana. I was like,
yeah.
It's actually, you recognized Star Trek. I was like, yeah. Odd Squad was one chose. Of my first favorite shows when my yeah. kids started watching stuff.
Yeah.
It's one of the first shows I ever watched where I was like, the kids are not here. I'm going to watch this show. It's so funny.
It's so funny. Well, Sinking Ship is the company, is the production company that produces Odd Squad and Dino Dana and they do all these wonderful, they're the same company. And the guy who runs it, J.J. Johnson, is just a gem of, I just love that man. And he actually hired me, the Dino Dana movie is the first thing I did with that company. There's another show called Endlings that I was a cop on, that I was on for several, they had a few seasons and I was like a regular, like a recurring character. But the Dino Dana movie, he just hired me out of nothing. And that really was a big moment for me, him hiring me, because then he hired me for so many other things that they were doing.
That's awesome.
And I got to play this seahorse Tanya on the, I don't know if you saw my actual episode.
I was going to go back and watch
it's it. Mobile Unit. I'm on Mobile Unit. Odd Squad Mobile Unit.
Oh my, that show's so funny. I've told funny. New jokes about
it's
that.
So yeah, funny.
It's hilarious.
Like the episode, it was hilarious. Like we were dressed in like paper mache sea creature costumes.
I think I've seen that. Have you seen? Or I'm one of something.
It was amazing to shoot that.
I meant to track it down and watch it before today, but I didn't.
It's quite funny.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I'm basically, I play the disgruntled assistant to this evil mastermind.
Yeah.
And I'm like dressed in this purple paper mache seahorse and I'm miserable.
Yeah.
So I'm like miserable the whole time. And I'm like, he makes us wear these comfortable costumes and it's like really funny. Really, really funny.
You would like that show too because it's almost like a who's who of like Canadian.
Yes.
I love.
Like they're just popping it all.
Yeah, like the Easter eggs. Like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fun.
So, anyway, sorry to.
No, that's, I it makes me very happy when people have watched things. I don't show a lot of stuff on my social media, which I'm trying to get better at being like, hey, I did this show, here's a clip, or, you know. And
yeah, I think people, it does, as much as you don't probably like doing that, it helps people know who you
I know,
are.
I
and
know.
It's just one of those necessary
I know, Brian.
Business owner you have to do.
I know. I just, so I've actually put a couple of clips together. I have it waiting for me to put up. Not a demo reel, but like a couple of funny clips from different shows that kind of, if you hear them together, it's kind of funny. Like the different lines from the different shows kind of
that's
don't go
too.
Together,
like
but it's kind of funny.
And what I love about this is like the way to let people know who you are without being like, oh, I took this role because I was blah, 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 blah.
Because
blah.
I just
like,
don't.
Here's
so
some funny things.
Yeah, like and how I put them together is kind of like funny. Because I think my hesitation about all that stuff has always been.
You don't want fame.
I don't. I really don't enjoy celebrity at all. I've never been a fan myself. Like I like people. I can respect and appreciate people's work. And surely there are actresses and actors that I like and all of those things. But I don't idolize anyone and I don't believe in it. And I think fandom is really weird. And I think celebrity is really, really weird.
At the Star Trek convention.
No, like, you know what? Here's the thing. I appreciate the appreciation. Like when you guys say things, when people come up to me and they've seen things, I like hearing from people that I didn't post anything and you just happen to watch it yourself.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, there she is. I love that. I love it when people just kind of come upon things. I find that really enjoyable because I like to see who's watching, like, you know, without me saying anything.
Yeah.
I like that. Though, yes, I do understand that I have to, you know, show people blah, 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 blah. But yeah, the celebrity fame thing is very icky to me. I don't aspire to it. And I surely, like you say, like, yeah, if I did a Star Trek, you know, convention and there were people lining up, that would be awesome and cool and I would appreciate it. But my interaction with those people would be just like I'm interacting with you. You know what I mean? Like I've worked very hard my entire life to not code switch. I don't like it.
Yeah.
I also have the privilege of having an occupation and a career where I don't actually have to. I don't work in the corporate world. I don't have to code switch. I don't have to use weird language in my emails that are like indirect and passive aggressive. I can't stand that shit.
Yeah.
So I'm like, you know, I always want to just be this person all the time mm-hmm. with anyone who I meet. And I've worked very hard to strip down the indoctrination that we are taught mm-hmm. and the politeness and the whatever it is that we're taught to put up. Like, mm-hmm. depending on the person that comes up to me. And I'm like, nope, I don't care what color you are. I don't care how you identify. I don't care about any of that stuff. You are a person, and here I am, and I'm going to be myself. Take it or leave it. Like, I just...
That happened to me with entrepreneurship as well.
Yeah.
Where you're always, like, putting masks on. Mm-hmm. I'm going to this job. I have to act this certain mm-hmm. way. And in the 5 years that I've been doing my marketing business, I've just been, this is who I am. I dress in a t-shirt. I'm not like dressing up for meetings. Like whether it's a big sales meeting or something small, like I'm dressed like this.
Yes.
This is just who I am. This is how I'm going to be at the market on Saturday over at somebody's house. Yes. Like,
he doesn't wear sweatpants though.
No, I don't wear sweatpants.
And I'm like constantly in sweatpants. Like I'm constantly
stylish
ones. Matching. I always have a matching set. I do like a matching set.
Yeah, yours are like Gucci. Mine are all
not
Navy.
They're not Gucci. Okay, for the record, people, they're not Gucci. Okay, they're Roots. Okay, predominantly Roots.
Roots.
Hey, Roots is not Gucci though.
It would be really funny to create for you a like entrepreneur LARPing character.
It would be really funny.
Where are we just like all the tropes?
All the tropes just of the entrepreneur. Happens. Yeah. I think that's a hilarious idea. Mm-hmm. I feel like because I'm writing my show, like literally everything that I live becomes like I see everything like a show now. Yeah, I've been walking around my life and like everything is a show. How could this possibly be in the show? And I feel like with the LARPing thing, that would be so funny if like the character, because the character that I play in the show is an actor. Like, it's based on my life. So maybe a less successful actor than me, but it would be so funny if she like gets hired. Somehow she gets stuck in this place.
Oh, I know exactly the role that you can get hired into.
And then she finds herself in this situation where there's like entrepreneur LARPing and she's like, what is happening right now?
That feels exhausting to me though. So like I saw a clip this week about Seinfeld who said the same thing. He said every conversation, every part of his life, he's seeing jokes. And the guy, I think it was like Rich Eisen in the sports.
Well, comics, I think.
Yeah, and he was like, is this, or it was even Howard Stern. And he was like, is this something? He's like, yeah, I'm thinking about jokes right now. Like, not to say, but how can this situation be a joke?
It's 100%.
And I've noticed that I do this now with myself of content. And thinking about like a content factory. So I've said to stuff to Brian before, I'm like, we should have been recording this.
Yeah.
Or we've had a couple like
I say that all the time too.
Yeah, where we're like, I don't want to talk about this right now, but we got to record this.
Yeah.
And it's not exhausting for me, but I feel like it would be exhausting for someone like you, an actor.
It's not exhausting for me. What it can be though is confusing.
Yeah.
So because I'm living it and writing it, you kind of get in this hall of mirrors kind of situation. We're like, what? Like, how do I pluck this out? And I wish I had cameras in my eyeballs and, like, audio equipment. Like, I wish my entire house was, like, cameras and audio. Like, just put my whole family, you know, on blast. But, like, and thankfully, they are the most supportive people and they're so into it. And I thank God. But, like, it's more just it's hard to pick out things from all the noise. I feel like because it's so much, right?
Oh yeah.
And now I've been like kind of hitting my TikTok. Like I like TikTok a lot. I think I like it the best actually because it's very democratic, you know, like there's like everyone and anything and it's can be quite raw. It can be like someone just rolled out of bed and made a video and there's like millions of likes, you know, or it could be someone who looks great and is selling makeup, you know, like it's like literally everything, and I love that about it. So I don't feel any pressure to look pretty or be anything other than myself.
Sure.
So what I've been doing in terms of content, it's just been the last like couple weeks that I've been like, every day I get up, I'm like, oh, but I'm like, oh, this is a good TikTok. I'm like filming all these things. And it's like, I thinking about it that way, but that's actually helping me with my writing. It's actually helping me because it's more, I guess the TikTok thing is more tactile. It's more like immediate in a way. It's like and off the cuff. Yeah. So it's as I'm, my purpose for doing the TikTok is to build kind of like, this is my life because the show is based on my life. So that when then I get ready to kind of launch the, hey guys, you know, I'm running this crowdfunding thing to shoot this thing. Like, and it's based on my, and you've just looked at all of this. So I'm just trying to build this kind of momentum. But that in and of itself is helping me to be a bit more clear and to know what works.
Yeah.
To kind of see what people think is funny. Oh, and what, you know what I mean? To really kind of test the waters. Mm-hmm, yeah. Because like I said, I don't think that what I'm doing is necessarily mainstream. It's definitely in the world of a Curb Your Enthusiasm, a Seinfeld, a Arrested Development, you know, kind of very mockumentary, like, Best in Show. Like, those are the things that I love. Like, so that's the vibe. But trying to understand how to relay that in my voice, like in my style, and if it lands. So the TikTok is actually helping me to kind of navigate it because I have hardly any followers right now. I'm like, cool. You know, I'm just fucking, I'm just like throwing everything at the wall. Like, today I posted some dancing. I'm like, I'm just gonna.
Yeah.
Just throw it all at the wall and see what hits and see what people like and go from there. But yeah, I think like you, I don't find it exhausting because it's in my inspiration. Like my family's always been my inspiration, I realized. Like my whole life. I remember when I was I think I was 12 and the yearbooks were coming out and I had been on holiday or whatever, like my family gone away when you were supposed to submit your blurb like for your photo. And so when the yearbooks came out, I had not submitted my blurb. So my teacher submitted my blurb and he wrote, happiness is being with my mother, brother, and sister. And at 12, I was devastated. I was like, that's what he wrote for me? I thought it was so corny.
Yeah.
Awkward. I was like, I would have said something funny or something. Yeah. And he put, happiness is being with my brother, mother, and sister. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
How lame is that, thanks, right? Nerd. But but then now, like all these years, I mean, it was true and it's still true. Yeah. Oh, I love that. Yeah. Yeah.
What's your, I don't know how long we're going, but like I.
Yeah, we're getting close to wrapping.
All right, one more Pandora's box. No, but
I know.
What's the coaching program about? Is it, are you teaching people how to act? Are you teaching them like how to audition? Are you teaching them how to save money for when things are kind of tight? Like what's the coaching business?
Yeah, so it encompasses all of those things. I coach people for auditions. I coach people who've never acted before. And within my coaching, I can't help but give business advice. I don't know how to separate those things, like when I'm talking to people, because it's very organic. My coaching is very much structured to the person I'm with, the specific person that I'm coaching. I don't have like this, you know, strict way of doing it that I just impose on everyone. I usually have a conversation with people first before we even start our coaching package to kind of get a sense of where they're at and what they know, what they don't know, all the things. So it encompasses all of that. But I also am really interested actually in branching out and also coaching business people and coaching people who do lectures and coaching people who do keynote speeches.
Presentations.
Because a lot
who are terrible on
camera. Yeah. So like,
for real, it's true.
I do sales presentations.
Yes.
I'm already confident, but I would like to be more confident or just better.
Engaging.
Yes. And then also I'm terrible on video. And I think if I need to take myself to like another level.
Yeah.
Business wise.
That needs to shift.
It's holding you back.
It is. Oh, that was hurtful, but it's true. You're totally right. It's true. I was like,
Ryan's like, have you met Matt?
No, it does. It does.
And even our friend Luke Shaw, friend of the show, Luke Shaw.
Yeah.
Like the business he has, like every business needs like Morning Cup Productions, people need video.
But they do.
One of the biggest barriers is people are like, I'm terrible on
TV. Yes.
So bad.
Most people.
So it's like, well, what if you weren't?
And yes.
Part of our working together mm-hmm. is for me to figure out, like I'll ham it up on camera, mm-hmm. but it's like, how do I find out how to be good?
Yeah.
And hopefully maybe create some things yeah. where you can use it as like, look at this idiot who I am.
Awesome the before and after. Yeah.
Like, what if you just
yep.
did that?
Yep.
So like, you know, invest in some coaching and
yeah.
now you can, like, I have great one-on-one conversations with people and like we've had where it's like, oh, imagine if this was recorded.
Right.
And if yeah. other people understood this, what would happen to my business?
Well, and this is the yeah. whole thing. I think the majority of people, I mean, public speaking is one of the number one fears of most yeah. people, right? So that's a really big thing. And especially now we live in a time where, yes, video content is extremely important. Being able to put out videos is like what everybody does. Yeah. And I know that I can get anyone to be good on camera. I know that mm-hmm. that is something that I know I can do. And because the way that I approach it, as I said, is individual. So I'm not going to come in here and talk to someone and tell them to act like this or act like that. No, we're going to get down to the nitty gritty of who you are, you know, how you naturally, where you naturally sit. Because the whole thing is that you want to be natural and authentic. So it's really, the camera is just a barrier that people get scared of. And it prevents them from staying natural.
Yes.
It's like it happens to my husband. It happens to Hal all the time. Hal is hilarious, as you know. He's such a ham. And yeah. and there are so many times, I wish he could just be in my show. I wish he could act as my husband, but he cannot.
Yeah.
Because the minute he'll be doing something hilarious, like I'm dying laughing, I will pull up my phone and it's like, done. Like, can't, yeah. like it's gone, right? It's completely yeah. gone. It's completely, and he's so serious. I'm like, what happened, right? So I think it's maintaining, not letting it be a blip. Like, it's like, you're here, you're doing this, now camera's not there, you're talking, you're great, camera comes, you're still great. Like, it's maintaining that energy as opposed to that camera interjecting itself.
When I was in Nashville, I was at the brand new studio and they were filming me do something and like, it was just funny because they're like, yeah, could you do that again and actually look at the camera this time?
Well, yes, because there's also technical parts.
Yeah,
so it's like,
oh, I was just going and like,
yeah.
again, things that you need yeah, to like.
Things that you learn. Need to know. So it starts with that authenticity. It starts with getting comfortable with having that in front of the camera. And then we get into the technical aspects of like, okay, where are we looking? Where's your light? What's your best angle? Like all of that kind of stuff, right? But yeah, I'm really interested to move also in that direction. I think that actually that's the place where people need the most help.
I also think it's the place where you'll find people most willing to crowdfund your projects.
That's also true. Yeah, for sure. I think that building a base, I've been in this one circle of, you know, people and peers and colleagues, and I'm really excited to expand that circle to include people from other businesses and other walks of life and, you know, other interests that we cross. Like we're like that Venn diagram, you know, like like somewhere in the middle we cross and we meet each other. And I'm really excited about that for sure. Not personally, but also obviously for my business. I think that's how my business will grow.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Awesome. What a great way to end it, end our conversation. How do people find you if they want to hire you?
So I have my website, which is AishaMansoorGonsalves.com. It's long, I know. I kind of did that on purpose. So anyway, yeah, so it's my whole name. I'm assuming you're going to have, I don't know.
We'll link it.
So they'll link it. These guys are going to link it. You can also find me on Instagram and TikTok. It's at Lost South Asian. All one word, lowercase.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And that's our show. Matt, what do you want the people to know and where can they find you?
I want them to go to mattygdigital.com and book a call.
Awesome. And I want them to go to profitcoach.ca and book a call with me. If you'd like to be on the podcast, please reach out to us and we can make that happen at setitup@kawarthasmallbusinesspodcast.ca.